Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast titled Secure Embedded Virtualization in a COTS Environment. I'm Kurt Schwader, Technical Editor at Open Systems Media, with speakers Arun Subbarao from LinuxWorks and Intel's Tanvir Alam. Embedded systems that require security have two traditional options, a bare metal approach, where the virtualization layer interfaces directly with custom hardware components, or a hosted approach where virtualization software runs as an application on top of a general-purpose, less secure operating system. Both these approaches require additional development time and costs associated with interfacing the virtualization software to hardware and software components. The industry has long awaited a secure platform based on an existing commercial off-the-shelf hardware and integrated software technologies proven in both commercial and military applications. In today's eCasts, we'll hear from Intel and LinuxWorks about exciting new developments for integrated, commercially available solutions for secure virtual embedded platforms. Today's briefing is scheduled for about 50 minutes, leaving 10 minutes at the end for questions. Before we begin, I'd like to point out four important buttons on your audience console. The first is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fit your entire screen. To the right of that is the Download Slides button. This button will allow you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. You'll also find on your console window a button that allows you to enter questions in real time. We'll do our best to address them during the closing Q&A session. You can submit a question at any time during the presentation. If you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, submit it and one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the eCast. After the Q&A portion of the eCast, there will be a closing survey that will pop up on your screen. So please take a minute to fill that survey out before leaving the eCast. Finally, this eCast will be posted online within 24 hours, and an audio podcast will also be available. More details on this at the end of the presentation. Today's speakers are Arun Subbarao from LinuxWorks and Tanvir Alam from Intel. Arun is Vice President of Engineering at LinuxWorks, responsible for the development of operating system and tools, products, and consulting services. He has more than 16 years of experience in the software industry, working in Linux, RTOS security, virtualization, and networking technologies. Previously, he was Director, Technology and Product Development, responsible for operating system product releases such as LinuxOS, LinuxOS 178, and Linux Secure. In this role, he successfully led product innovation in the areas of Linux ABI compatibility, safety-critical software, and virtualization. He has also been a panelist and presenter at several industry conferences. Arun started his career with Wipro Technologies, one of the largest IT services companies in India. He holds a BS in Computer Science from India, MS in Computer Science from SUNY Albany, and an MBA in Santa Clara University. Tanvir Alam is a platform architect for virtualization in the Intel Embedded Group. He helps enable Intel vPro technologies in the embedded ecosystem. Tanvir also has a background in medical devices and telecom. He possesses a MS-EE from Columbia University in New York. Arun will kick off today's presentation. Arun?
Thank you, Kurt. As Kurt mentioned, secure embedded virtualization and security are very hot topics these days in the context of embedded systems. And what I'm trying to do with this set of slides here is to bring forth certain key technology elements that will allow you to understand what goes into creating and taking advantage of these technologies that really bring in some compelling value to existing and future embedded designs. So let's start off by looking at the notion of a secure virtualization platform. If you really look at the solution stack, there really are several components, starting, of course, with the hardware, which is a very key and important part of this, and Tanvir will talk more about that. And then on top of the hardware sits the secure separation kernel and hypervisor. And that's going to be the focus of most of my slides here in the next 20 minutes. And the secure separation kernel hypervisor is the key operating system enabler for running full and para-virtualized operating systems, and the ability to host more than one operating system on the same piece of hardware. So that in itself is a a very compelling value proposition for embedded designs that had not been previously available, you know, without the separation kernel and hypervisor technology. So let's start looking at the separation kernel and hypervisor technology to see what are the elements that are behind this technology and what value it brings to embedded designers. So we are going to look at it in two parts. One is the separation kernel part, which really is a key part of the software technology that brings in security functions. And the other part of it is the embedded hypervisor part. Now, even though both of these are consolidated into a single product with LinuxWorks, it is useful to look at it as two separate pieces because they have different functions within the separation kernel and the hypervisor, and the value that it brings in is very distinct. And so the embedded hypervisor part really supports the ability to run guest operating systems, takes advantage of the multi-core processors that are out there, and exploits various virtualization techniques that basically allow embedded designers to be able to create compelling and efficient designs as we move forward and taking advantage of both the hardware and software that's out there. So let's start looking at the separation kernel part of it. What is a separation kernel? Separation kernel is a notion of creating a very thin software layer that's running directly on top of the hardware and provides the basic fundamental building block for security within applications. And the reason why it's termed separation kernel is because it essentially provides two key parts of the value. You know, in terms of isolating different security domains, and the other one is to allow for information flow between those domains. So what the separation kernel will essentially do is to create isolated brick wall partitions that will allow distinct operating systems to run completely isolated from each other, thereby the operations of one guest operating system will not affect the other operating system, and thereby creating a level of data isolation that's not necessarily available in non-separation kernel technologies. Now, once you create that data isolation, you also need to have a way to communicate between those two partitions or isolated guest operating systems. And that's where the information flow control comes in. The information flow control is a very rigid and very tightly enforced security policy that basically indicates which partitions or which guest OSs can talk to which other guest OSs. So when you put these two concepts together, a separation kernel really brings in some compelling value by which you can take guest OSs and run them on a piece of hardware while completely keeping two distinct operating systems isolated from each other. Say, for example, Windows for user interface type applications and RTOSes for highly mission critical type applications can both be hosted on the same piece of hardware. So what are some of the security benefits of the separation kernel? We touched upon a few key things, but the value that it brings, I think, is quite significant. It provides for a standards-based, you know, secure multi-domain computational platform because the ability of the separation kernel to be less than 10,000 lines of code allows it to be taken to the highest levels of assurance. You know, there can be evaluation that's done to bring together information assurance on the separation kernel. And along with that comes several other components as well, the preserving of investment in legacy systems, the ability to run existing guest operating systems on top of the separation kernel really allows you to preserve that investment in software that has been done previously. And that's another key piece of value. And the lowering of swap, that's a very important consideration in certainly in defense systems and equally applicable in other commercial markets as well, is the ability to take two operating systems and host them on a single piece of hardware, thereby reducing the amount of real estate that the hardware platform actually takes. So when you combine some of the capabilities of the separation kernel and you put that together with the hypervisor, what you end up with is a secure virtualization platform that allows you, on the one hand, to take advantage of security and with the separation kernel, and on the other hand, with the hypervisor part of it, to bring together virtualization and hosting of guest operating systems all on the same platform, while preserving some of the key tenets of what traditional real-time operating systems have been providing in the past, which is really real-time determinism, small footprint, fast reboot, fast boot-up times. All the capabilities of a traditional RTOS is preserved in the concept of the separation kernel and hypervisor while reducing the footprint almost by an order of magnitude. And so therein lies the compelling value proposition of the secure virtualization platform, because it's in the intersection of both virtualization and security and preserves some of the concepts of the real-time operating system. So having looked at the separation kernel part of it, let's segue a little bit and look at the embedded hypervisor. Now, what is an embedded hypervisor and how does that differ from a traditional hypervisor? The embedded systems traditionally have had some very key needs in the market, some of the things that I mentioned previously, which is small footprint, the ability to boot up very quickly, the ability to have multiple heterogeneous guest operating systems. You know, all those things come together in the concept of this embedded hypervisor. And the embedded hypervisor, when you compare it to a traditional Type 1 hypervisor that is on the server side, is an order of magnitude, or maybe even two orders of magnitude, smaller. You know, just to give you an example, Link Secure, you know, could be in the order of anywhere from, you know, half a meg to 2 meg, depending on what's configured, whereas things like VMware and Xen, et cetera, are in the order of magnitude of 100 megabytes or even gigabytes of memory. So the embedded hypervisor really brings forth some of the key requirements of embedded systems, namely small footprints, and key real-time determinism, and brings together the traditional virtualization concepts all on a single platform. So I have some references here in this slide where there's a Wikipedia reference, and please go ahead and read that if you're interested in what an embedded hypervisor is. So what are some of the, let's look at what are the guest OS environments that run on top of this embedded hypervisor. So there is traditionally two ways you could have guest OS environments running. One is a homogeneous case. This is a case where you're running multiple instances of the same operating system. So you can run three instances of Linux or three instances of Windows on the same hypervisor. And what that does is it allows for homogeneity of running applications while providing isolation. So there are use cases where people want to run multiple instances of the same guest OS while isolating some of the applications into two different partitions. And the homogeneous environment allows you to do that. The other use case is the heterogeneous guest OS environment use case. And that's where, you know, you start to run different guest OSs on the same hypervisor. And traditionally what we have seen in the embedded space is that the heterogeneous use case seems to be extremely popular, because what it does is it allows you to start bringing two different, very different type of operating systems, such as a Windows and a real-time operating system or a Linux, and run it on the same platform, thereby consolidating hardware, reducing the swap, but preserving the applications and the key characteristics of those operating systems without necessarily having to port those apps from one operating system to another. So that is the beauty of the heterogeneous guest OS environment that's afforded by the separation kernel and the hypervisor, is it enables a huge universe of applications to run on a single platform. You have the ability, if you're running Linux, Windows, and RTOS on a single platform, now all of a sudden you have the entire universe of Linux apps, the entire universe of Windows apps, and all the mission-critical real-time applications could all be hosted on a single platform. So the heterogeneous use case, I think, is starting to become very popular in the context of embedded virtualization. Now, there is another dimension to the guest OS environments. One is the issue of guest OSs and how you run it. There's two flavors of it. One is the fully virtualized case, and the other one is a para-virtualized case. And let me just articulate on what the differences are between those two. The fully virtualized operating system involves emulating all the capabilities of the processor and the board and virtualizing the platform so that you can run operating systems unmodified. So for example, Windows, where there may not be the ability to get access to the source code, would essentially be run as is without modifications on the hypervisor platform. So this is extremely compelling because it not only brings in the ability to run guest OSs for which there may not be access to sources, but there's also the ability to bring in proprietary homegrown operating systems for which the source code may not be available or the licenses may have not been may not be available. So you can take all those guest operating systems and run it unmodified while bringing all the applications that were running on top of that on top of the separation kernel and hypervisor. So the use cases there are the ability to do COTS refresh, where you can take an operating system that was running on an older piece of hardware that may not run on modern hardware, but because it's running in the context of a separation kernel and hypervisor, you can bring forth that operating system and all the applications and do a hardware refresh. And that allows the ability to do refreshes of COTS and bring forth new hardware platforms to existing design. The other capability, of course, is para-virtualization. Para-virtualization really is a technique that involves taking the operating system and modifying certain small pieces of it, or pieces that really pertain to the platform, the architectural dependent parts, and have a close cooperation between the para-virtualized guest and the separation kernel and hypervisor that allows the para-virtualized guest OS to run. Now, the advantage to this, of course, is because it is making certain calls into the hypervisor, there may be some performance optimization that could be done with para-virtualized, but the key requirement for para-virtualization is the ability to have sources. So, for example, things like Linux, is not necessarily a problem, or BSD, because those are open source operating systems. So those are the two key techniques, and I think the performance of these two would vary depending on workload and hardware assist. And so what I would encourage embedded designers out there is to evaluate both of the options, which is available under the separation kernel and hypervisor from LinuxWorks, and make informed decisions and choices on what's capable and what is appropriate for a particular embedded design. Then let's talk a little bit about hypervisors and multi-core processors. Multi-core processors are everywhere these days. They've been there the last 2 to 3 years. A lot of the semiconductor vendors have been essentially introducing a lot of multi-core designs. And multi-core is a very key advantage for hypervisors because it's a natural technical fit, because the hypervisors create partitions that are isolated that are essentially provide the notion of an independent platform for guest OSs that are running on top of it. And when you align that partition with a multi-core processor, now all of a sudden you have a guest OS that's running in a partition that is taking advantage of one or more cores. And essentially, the guest OS has the notion that it owns the complete platform. And so that's one of the compelling values for why hypervisors is an excellent piece of software technology that takes advantage of the inherent multi-core capabilities that are afforded by processors these days. Now, the assignment scenarios for guest OSs to processors, there's three variants. There is
what's called as a static
assignment,
where you take one guest and assign it to one processor, and that's the very traditional approach where you want to have
the guest operating system continue to have its notion of a uniprocessor platform. Then there's the scheduled scenario, which is you have only one processor, but you want to run more than one guest OS,
right?
And and the separation kernel and hypervisor needs to be able to provide that capability where you can actually time slice a single processor amongst multiple guest OSs.
And that is also of key value because certain embedded designs continue to have only single processors, but they may want to have the ability to bring in multiple operating systems.
And then the third, and probably the more complicated case, is the load balancing case,
where you have one guest that wants to acquire more than one core, which is your traditional symmetric multiprocessing or multi-core design. And that allows for a single guest to take advantage of the dual or quad-core or eight-core processors that are out there.
So you can assign three or four or five cores to a particular guest, depending on the kind of workload it's going to take, and divide up the rest of the cores
amongst other guest operating systems.
So the ability of a hypervisor to allow these different types of
assignment scenarios is extremely critical
to really provide the appropriate flexibility to embedded designs that are out there. So I would certainly encourage the audience to look at these capabilities within the hypervisors so that you get the maximum flexibility from your design. So if you look at the, this is a block diagram that really brings together those three different assignment scenarios into a single diagram. So you see on the left-hand side you have an SMP Linux that's essentially taking two of the four cores that are available on the platform. And because the guest itself is SMP enabled, it has the ability to take more than one core. The second two scenario is the multiple guests sharing a single core, and you see a Linksys SE, which is one of our RTOSes, and a Linux that is sharing core number three. And then on the rightmost side, you have the fully virtualized Windows that has a dedicated core. And so you could see that the ability of the hypervisor to provide all these three different scenarios gives utmost flexibility to embedded designers that are using virtualization for their next generation designs. Then let's talk a little bit about
the scheduling aspect of it.
So it's a multidimensional problem. Now, how do you schedule various guest operating systems on top of the multi-core processors? So there's four different elements. In terms of the overall hierarchy, there's the processor and how many processors you have. There's the partitions, depending on how many guest OSs you want to create. And then within each partition, you have the traditional notion of a process and a thread that's afforded by each of the guest OSs that are running. So the separation kernel hypervisor takes a tiered approach to this, by which it basically concentrates on assigning partitions to particular processors, and the scheduling of partitions onto processor is primarily the responsibility of the hypervisor. And within the context of a partition, the scheduling of processes and threads is really left to the guest operating system that is running on top of it. So what this does is it simplifies the overall problem, which is inherently somewhat complicated, by which the separation kernel and hypervisor really is focusing on how to allocate partitions to different processors. And the guest OSs continue to deal with processes and threads that it would normally do when it's running standalone. So regardless of whether it's running standalone or running virtualized, the notions of processes and threads continue to be preserved in the context of this virtualized platform. What that does is also allows applications to continue to utilize some of those processes and thread scheduling parameters that are available to it programmatically. And none of the applications would need to change because of the way this architecture has been put together. And then lastly, there is the issue of
device management. So
device management is probably one of the more complicated parts of virtualization, and that's primarily because it's somewhat easier to time slice CPU and memory, but sharing devices, because there's usually only one of each instance in a particular platform, is somewhat more complicated. And so we suggest that there are three potential models to handle devices within virtualized environments. One is the single guest assignment, which is somewhat simplistic, but are certainly useful in certain embedded designs, where you basically take a single guest and assign all the devices to that particular guest. and that becomes the owner of all the devices in the device driver hierarchy. And all the other guests that are running in the context of a virtualized platform would basically communicate to the devices through that particular guest. Okay. Somewhat simplistic, but somewhat easy to implement as well. The second scenario is the direct assignment scenario. This is where you basically take the number of devices that you have, and you basically split it
amongst the different guest OSs.
So you assign, say, an Ethernet to a Linux, you assign the graphics to a Windows, and you assign certain real-time devices to the RTOS, potentially. And what this does is it allows the direct assignment of these guest OSs, and the device drivers within those guests would directly be interfacing with these hardware devices. And you can preserve some of the real-time capabilities as well as some of the direct rendering for graphics or any particular network intrusion detection on Ethernet can all be preserved, because then the individual guest OSs that own that particular device can basically handle that. And then the third scenario is the device sharing scenario. And this is probably the most complicated one, where you have a single device that is actually going to be receiving requests from multiple guest OSs. And this requires a certain amount of hardware capabilities and hardware assist, and Tanvir will certainly touch upon it a little bit later in his presentation. But those are the three different models for handling devices. And it's very important for embedded designers to think through what their device model is and how you would want to handle that in the context of multiple guest OSs sharing a single platform. And certainly some of both the software and the hardware capabilities that are afforded by the separation column hypervisor as well as the processor architecture will certainly simplify this to a great extent. So with that, I think I will hand it over to Tanvir now to talk a little bit about the hardware, and then we'll come back to Q&A.
Okay, thanks, Arun. So actually, in reality, from Arun's conversation, I can see that the hardware and the hypervisor and the guest partitions on top actually all play a very symbiotic relationship in terms of getting the system to be secure and performance-oriented. But really, with what you really mean by security and performance is as good as your hypervisor, how secure it is, and the I.O. as well as the memory and any of the other interfaces, how secure are they, and how are they interfacing with your hardware, and how the hypervisor is dealing with it. So let me introduce Intel vPro technology. I'm sure you have heard of some of these technologies. They're available in the higher end of the Intel silicon. And it's basically a trifecta of technology, including Intel virtualization, Intel trusted execution, and Intel active management technologies. So we're going to talk mostly about Intel virtualization because, again, this is a virtualization presentation. I'm going to give you a brief overview and a taste, if you will, of the technologies that are included in the vPro technology. So first of all, virtualization allows secure isolation through hardware-assisted operating systems or kernel partitioning. And basically, it allows hardware hooks that the hypervisor can use to make sure that the memory, I.O., as well as any other interface is actually hardware-controlled and allows the hypervisor to talk directly to hardware and manage whatever guest partition is on top. And there's also other umbrella technologies we offer that enables hardware acceleration for the hypervisor and allows the hypervisor to operate in a root mode, ring zero type of setting. In addition to that, as I mentioned, the security also means security is as good as your boot process as well as your hypervisor. So Intel Trusted Execution, or Intel TXT, allows certain hardware protocols and with the use of a TPM chip that allows to make sure that your hypervisor at boot time is protected and it is the right software signature that it is meant to have, meaning it is authorized. So if it's not authorized, Intel TXT could notify the user that the BIOS and the hypervisor is of a different code, something changed in the code, and it would actually stop the boot and notify the user. And lastly, we have Intel Active Management Technology. So this allows the remote management of embedded systems, so you could actually remotely manage a system in case it goes down. And even if the system is completely turned off, you could manage the system, go and do a system inventory, reload from a different partition, as well as do a remote reboot. So that is more of the management part of the picture. So let's go slightly to the benefits of virtualization, and Arun pointed a few of these out, but I'm just going to go a little bit more in detail on some of these. And there's at the end, we'll have some use cases for embedded that particularly highlight some of these benefits. So obviously, virtualization with its hardware optimizes the hardware resource through system consolidation. In embedded systems, if you had multiple systems, such as maybe an industrial setting, you could have all of those in one embedded system, and they could have multiple operating systems secure as well as at a cheaper cost. Preserve legacy code while migrating to a new system. Again, because hypervisor allows that abstraction layer with a hypervisor, so you don't have to port code. You can use, as long as the hypervisor supports it, from an older generation operating system to a newer generation system without having to do a lot of revalidation of the code. And obviously, it also allows legacy and new applications to exist without interference in that way. Also, it eliminates downtime, enabling live migration of running applications. And this is what's coming, benefit coming from the server world of virtualization, where you could actually, in the embedded setting, if you have multiple deployments of these, you could actually resource manage those remotely, so you know the system is optimally used. But in a single use case, obviously, this would not be that much of a benefit. The other thing is that provides information assurance and data integrity and isolation of multiple protected domains. And multiple protected domains is what LinuxWorks is doing in terms of software and hypervisor, and they're protected in terms of their software security, and Intel provides the hardware and the hardware hooks of it to make sure the memory and I/O are protected as well as the interrupts. And overall, it will reduce your total cost of ownership over time because, again, you have consolidated and you have a secure system. And then with the Intel vPro technologies, including the management, you could actually reduce a lot of truck rolls in case the system has been dead on arrival and that type of case. Okay, let's go to the next slide here. VT has a couple of component technologies that it uses to acquired those benefits, and I'll go over each of them a little bit. So VT has VTX, which is the processor end of the acceleration and security. VTD is the I/O and the chipset end. It also deals with some of the memory DMA between the I/Os and the memory. And VTC, which is the network protocols that, and as well as hardware assist that make sure that the packets coming from a network Ethernet type of interface is actually efficiently delivered to all the guest partitions. So let's delve a little bit more into each of these. Again, so VTX, as I mentioned, is a CPU acceleration technology for virtualization. It allows your hypervisor to reside in a ring zero, and it's a hardware-recognized ring zero, not an emulated ring zero, and as opposed to a user mode. And so the hypervisor gets all the privileges to control anything below in hardware. The hypervisor arbitrates any transaction and traps any of the transactions between the guest partition. But again, those are recognized by hardware, and the hardware actually manages all the memory access and the I/O. Obviously, dedicated hardware-managed processor address space for each guest partition. And this is very important in terms of hardware domain, because in an emulated domain with just a hypervisor, in a hosted type of setting where you would have just a hypervisor emulating the hardware below, if you are able to use Intel VTX and VT hooks, you can actually have this hardware do a lot of the memory management, and so the MMU that you have, which would be software emulated, which would now be taken over by the hardware, and the hardware manages all the memory spaces to each of the guest partitions. So the overall result is acceleration of virtualization performance. So with Intel virtualization technologies, we are constantly reducing exit latencies, reducing the frequencies of how many times it goes into a virtual domain and comes back, optimizing cache flushes, so make sure that a lot of data is already pre-populated in the cache, so it doesn't have to go in and out of a virtual domain. And also, in the newer generation of Intel processors, we added extended page tables, which obviously reduces the switching time between going in and out of a virtual environment, what we call VM entries and VM exits. So let's move to the... I just wanted to, in a graphical sense, wanted to show you how that fits in the whole platform picture. And the processor, as you said, when without a virtualized environment, you would have to do ring deprivileging and binary translation. But in with a VTX case, you now do VTX configuration, and the hypervisor basically uses the hardware hooks to control those aspects. And the extended page tables obviously manages the page table, so the need for shadow page tables in software, managing those is reduced or even eliminated, and the hardware manages page tables for each of the guest kernels. So VTD is the I/O acceleration technology. It deals with memory remapping, which is any I/O that's coming in, PCI Express mostly, as well as USB and SATA. These type of I/Os do DMAs, and usually in a normal case without VT, you would have to do a lot of processor interrupts to make sure that a lot of the data is going to the right partition or to the right operating system. But with VTD, these direct assignments could be made to each of the guest partitions, so the DMA is direct targeted towards any guest partition you want to go to data, you want the data to arrive at. And you don't have to do a lot of interrupts. You do not have to, bottleneck the processor to do a lot of these. These are taken care of in the chipset hardware. Interrupt virtualization is, again, another similar case where there are tons of interrupts coming in, and this is especially true in more of the interrupt-driven use cases that we have, like networking or telecoms, where there's a lot of interrupts coming in from the Ethernet or any of the I/O hubs, and you want to go at it to the right partition that's taking care of those data, and that's kind of indicated in the interrupts. And that is done through hardware now, where the correct guest partition is basically assigned a address space and memory, and whenever that interrupt is given, that address space is populated with the data that's needed for the interrupt vector. And so you don't have to constantly tell the guest operating system where that data is, because it's actually residing in a certain allocated space that's controlled by hardware in memory. And thirdly is the direct I/O assignment to guest partition. And this has been proven pretty useful in a lot of embedded circumstances, is where you can actually assign a guest directly to a I/O device. So in some cases where we have a guest that is want to control directly a device and doesn't wants to bypass a lot of the hypervisor partitioning and the delays involved, we could directly do that by using the VTD technology and the direct device access, so a particular guest operating system can directly access a device. And finally, we'll talk a little bit more of the single root I/O virtualization in the next segment, because it kind of overlaps with the VTC aspects of it. But let's look at that at that time. So in the whole picture, this is where the memory virtualization falls in place, where before you would have to do kind of I/O DMA remapping and interrupt remapping. In software and emulation with Intel VTD, you can do that in hardware, and the DMN interim maps are taken care of the hardware hooks that we have provided in the chipset and processor. And finally, there is the networking or network I/O acceleration technology that includes a lot of, as I mentioned, a lot of the telecoms as well as the networking use cases that we have. And in those cases, you would have to use, you know, virtual machine device queues, as they call that. These are actually queues inside of our chipsets that actually queue up a lot of these networking data and assign, and they are kind of direct assigned to a particular guest OS. So again, there a lot of the arbitration aspect of it is kind of eliminated because a dedicated memory is assigned to a dedicated partition, and so nobody has to go looking as to where that data is. And so that eliminates a lot of searching and translation in terms of address translation from physical to virtual. And also direct connect, in this case also it's similar to the I/O direct connect, and you are able to directly assign a network device to a guest partition. And so whatever transactions, it kind of bypasses a lot of the logic of the hypervisor and directly is able to access that guest operating system. So the benefits are improved CPU utilization, increased throughput, and lower latency. And in all those cases, as you can see, because there is a lesser number of interrupts to the processor, as well as, you know, the hypervisor doesn't have to rely on software translation, but rather it depends on hardware to do any kind of memory address translation. It becomes much faster to get data to the right place in the system. So in picture, that's where it falls in terms of the platform overview. If you see the right side where it's the I/O device virtualization, you have network device, and before you would have to do emulation for the driver as well as do some parallel virtualization. In this case, when you do VTC, we take advantage of the hardware buffers we have added in the Ethernet hardware as well as the chipset, and so it becomes a lot more easier to do that. Let's move to the overall picture. So again, I mentioned early in the presentation that the LinuxWorks hypervisor as well as the secure partition kernel and the Intel hardware plays a symbiotic relationship. And as I mentioned a little bit in giving you a hint on how it does it in terms of the hardware hooks and the three resources we have with virtualization, as well as trusted execution, which allows security in boot time, and together it creates a very compelling picture for embedded, for a secure as well as efficient hypervisor environment. So again, this is the just to give you a whole picture in terms of all the technologies we have in virtualization. Again, just to recapture, we have VTX for all the processor acceleration, VTD for any of the memory and I/O interrupt virtualization, and VTC that deals with any of the network traffic, and it makes that more efficient. Now, I left out one thing, which was SRIOV, which is a new technology we added in the network protocols, the VTC end of it, and that allows, it is single root I/O virtualization. It allows, actually each partition to be almost independent owners of the network card. So, and it virtually, but it's actually managed by hardware. So suppose you have one Ethernet device that you want to share with multiple guest operating systems or guest partitions, and but in SRIOV does it in such a way that each of those operating systems not only feels, it has the hardware underneath. It actually does in terms of chipset. It's actually completely partitioned, and even the Mac level data is actually buffered in and directly assigned to a particular segment of memory that just deals with that partition. So it becomes very it's very targeted towards each of the partitions, and there is no pilfering across partitions, which makes it even more secure. So it's something that you can look into later on in your as your use cases for such technologies arise. I'm going to go to the next slide where we, I just want to give you a brief history if, as well, if you will, in terms of the how the Intel virtualization architecture evolved. Again, so we, from the left is kind of in the timeline, and we have we started with the VTX technologies that added all the processor hooks and efficiencies inside the processor to take care of the virtualization, and something that the LinuxWorks hypervisor uses, and then obviously the VTD, which does the DMA remapping, and finally the VTC, which deals with the network aspects of it. And as we go forward, obviously the goal would be to add more of those hardware acceleration features in hardware, so the hypervisor is left to deal with much complex tasks between the guest partitions. And so that is something that you will continue to see from Intel as we make it easier for hypervisors to use the hardware bottom layer, and so it opens up and frees up more resources and results in much faster low latency operations. So, and finally, I'd like to leave you with some of the embedded use cases that we have seen. And again, LinuxWorks and Intel share a lot of these use cases that we have seen in the real life. Let's go over a few of them. So legacy OS consolidation, we talked a little bit about it, and Arun also mentioned it. So, you know, you had legacy OSs, and you wanted to migrate it over to a newer generation hardware, suppose the Core i7 type processors in this generation for Intel. And you could put a thin hypervisor, Lint Secure, for example, here in between to coordinate that. And so you can also determine, you know, the level of security for each of those partitions, as well as the deterministic performance for each of those partitions as well. Trusted open application integration, and again, this is coming from more of the media world, but it's soon going to be applicable in a lot of our use cases as well. But in terms of, you know, suppose you have a very high maintenance operating system that's dealing with a lot of interrupts, and it's very intensive in terms of hardware resources, you can assign it to a particular kernel, as well as and that kernel is directly assigned to a CPU. And then the other CPU is actually free to do other tasks, such as you know, maintaining another embedded OS that does a lot of the GUI aspects of the tasks. So, and those are kind of separated in two kernels and directly assigned to two processors dealing with it. So, as you can see, because they don't overlap in terms of performance as well. And the media intensive operating system could get you could assign 60 or 70% of the processor resources of the whole system, and guarantee that because the other operating system is not filtering over or interfering with that. So again, guaranteed performance in terms of your critical system. We have another example of that below, but I'll quickly go over that as well. And again, also real-time and general-purpose consolidation, OS consolidation is another example where you have a real-time operating system and a general-purpose operating system working in parallel and concurrency, and you could have both with Intel VT as well as the tools that LinuxWorks offers, we could guarantee the performance of each of those partitions as well as offer levels of security that is not possible without virtualization. And finally, as I mentioned, the performance critical application separation. We're seeing that in some of these medical type use cases that we have seen here in embedded, where there's, you know, one partition that is very performance critical and needs to be guaranteed in terms of quality of service, and on the other side you have a user space that does a lot of user interfacing, and you need to dedicate a certain amount of processing as well as security to the critical infrastructure and critical guest. And so you would do that using a combination of the hypervisor as well as the internal hardware, directly assigning to certain devices if you want. And that takes away a lot of the latency and guarantees the performance of that particular partition, as well as leaves enough bandwidth free for the GUI as well as the user interface partition to deal with any of the user issues. You know, these are just four examples we have seen in embedded and practical use cases of hypervisors and using the Intel virtualization technologies. So finally, I think I'd like to hand it over to Kurt for Q&A. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. We have some questions here. Very good. And we'd invite the audience to please submit questions as well as we continue the Q&A. I guess the first one we have here is for Tanvir. One of them, it says, I can see where the dedicated hardware managed processor address space is a big performance boost. What they want to know is if it creates any kind of limits on the number of guest OSs that can run on a given processor, or is this hardware managed address space just for the secure kernel, or how that works?
So the number of guest OSs, again, it's limited by the number of memory you have, as well as any of the restriction of the hypervisor vendor. In terms of if you have a lot of processes running and a lot of guest partitions, in terms of hardware, we really don't have a limit. It just depends on the system resources you have and if there is any restrictions on the hypervisor side. Obviously, you do not want so many guest operating systems running that you would actually, if it's equally divided in each of those resources, then you would, for each additional guest, you were actually reducing the system so much that you might be reducing the entire system load. But in other cases where you're, giving selected bandwidth to each of the guest OSs, then, it's up to you to choose which of the guest OSs you want to give more preference to and maybe starve some of the guest OSs some of the time when, it's not critical. So it's all up to you in terms of how you implement it in your solution.
So the next question is for Arun. What would be a good example of when I would use paravirtualization and where they would modify their OS? I guess they'd like to understand what the ramifications are of putting their OS on top of a virtualization secure kernel or hypervisor.
Yeah, and I think what we've seen, traditionally is that paravirtualization under certainly real-time workloads can give slightly better performance for the guest OS. So that would primarily be one of the reasons to paravirtualize or look into paravirtualizing your operating system. And the particular hardware processor that you're using is also a factor in this. For example, on the core i7s and forward, there's this technique called EPT, which closes the gap between fully virtualized and paravirtualized guest operating systems. But if it's the slightly older Montevina architecture, then that one does not have EPT, and that's where, depending on the workload, you may want to consider paravirtualizing it. Tanvir, anything else to add from a hardware standpoint?
No, I think that pretty much covers it.
Okay.
Here's a kind of a related question for Arun. How do homegrown OSs fit into the legacy OS consolidation concept?
Yeah, I think, a lot of the homegrown OSs have, a couple of different, issues or challenges. One is that sometimes they run on older pieces of hardware, and it's somewhat hard to port it over to modern hardware. So the ability to bring forward those homegrown operating systems is somewhat limited. But there's usually a compelling business reason or technical reason to keep the homegrown operating system in the mix because of either the software investment that has gone into it, some previous certification that particular homegrown operating system has obtained. So there's a lot of reasons why you want to keep that homegrown operating system. But at the same time, you don't want to limit your next generation design into staying with the old hardware that homegrown operating system was running on. Neither do you want to spend time porting the homegrown operating system into modern piece of hardware. So the separation kernel hypervisor is a great way to do neither of those and yet bring forward the homegrown operating system because the separation kernel handles the interface with the modern hardware.
Good. Here's another question for Tanvir. There was a question about, you mentioned the three separate VT solutions, VTX, VTD, and VTC. Is that part of a combined chip solution, or is that a chipset solution, or are they really three different components in the hardware architecture?
Very good question. I think I wanted to, if this is causing confusion, I want to just clear it. So the component technology, this is a more technical-oriented class, so I wanted to go in a little bit on the component technologies. But VT by itself is umbrella technology that's already built in into our chipset. So we do not need a separate chip for any of those technologies to take place, except for the case of VTC, where the Ethernet card needs to be compliant. But the solutions, the chipset solutions are already in the chipset that we have available. So again, no different hardware is needed to actually implement any of the VT solution. I just wanted to go into detail and kind of separate out what acceleration we added for the processor, as well as the I/O, as well as the network. So those are three component technologies, but they'll all roll into that one big VT acceleration technology we offer in our higher-end Core i5, i7, and this generation class solutions.
Okay, I see. Here's a question for Arun on combining real-time and non-real-time operating systems on the same core. Does that compromise the nature of the real-time applications, or does the secure kernel do something to help manage, maintaining the real-time characteristics of the OS in that kind of environment?
Yes, the Link Secure Separation Kernel does allow you to time slice between an RDoS and a general purpose operating system. And the scheduling model is the one that helps that, because it's very strictly deadline-based scheduling. So it's fixed cyclic. So the amount of time that's given to a particular partition is very, very rigid. So what you would want to do is, if you are time slicing between a guest operating system that's real-time and a non-real-time, you want to carefully look at the amount of CPU time that's given to each of the guest OSs so that you are continuing to meet your real-time deadlines under this schedule. And then the other aspect to consider, of course, is also the devices and what devices you're assigning to the real-time operating system. But Link Secure is fully capable of doing such a scenario.
Okay. And a related question is, can you run applications directly on the secure kernel itself, or do you have to put a guest OS in between?
Yeah, that's really an excellent question. One of the things that we have done with Link Secure is that we had this vision that not every application requires a heavyweight guest OS. So we have a component called LSA, which is the Link Secure application, that runs directly on the hypervisor using the separation kernel hypervisor APIs to create small trusted applications that bypass or do not necessarily require a heavyweight guest OS. So that is absolutely a valid scenario, and it's provided under all the generations of Link Secure that have been released so far.
Oh, interesting. Does it have like Linux-like or POSIX-like libraries it can link against to do kind of to make it look like, from a coding perspective, it's running in a Linux environment, only it's running right on the hypervisor, or is this more for a more basic application?
It's intended to be a very basic application in terms of the APIs that it provides, primarily because it's an infrastructure. We would like to have our embedded designers create just as much code as they need on top of a bare metal hypervisor. And so there are libraries that we provide that are the embedded users can link to, but we have felt that the POSIX interface is in fact too rich for such an interface, because you end up supporting the process model and the thread model, which we really don't want to do.
Right.
So it's a very, very lightweight and very targeted application that you would write for security type application.
Okay, very good. I guess one of the last questions here, people want to know if the Link Secure is currently available for the latest embedded platforms, the Core i7 ones.
Yes, Link Secure 4.0 that was released about 2 months ago fully supports the Intel Core i7 family. And you know, please contact our appropriate representatives, and you'll be able to acquire the operating system.
Okay, very good. Well, we've run out of time for the Q&A. That brings us to the conclusion of the eCast. I'd like to thank very much our presentation and presenters for such an insightful and informative session. We and the presenters also want to thank you all for attending today's session and contributing questions remotely. This eCast will be posted online at the URL shown on your screen within 24 hours. Note that an audio-only podcast version is also available. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all Open Systems Media eCasts available for download as MP3s. Thank you all for attending, and have a great day.